this is our most technical episode to date. And I think we're going to have a special guest.
There is a space for a special guest.
I'm excited.
All right. Well, the important things. What's in your glass today?
Not usually something I'd sip, but I didn't want to come back and have just like be like, hey, John, I got four roses again. So the other thing in my cabinet right now is Rittenhouse Rye.
Nice.
I've been on a Manhattan kick again, which has always been one of my go-to cocktails. And it kind of got supplanted by the Boulevardier. But now I've swung back and I've been on a little bit of a Manhattan kick.
It's good.
So that's what we have. Yeah. This Rittenhouse Rye is an excellent Manhattan rye.
Cool. Maybe I have to get some of that.
What are you drinking?
I'm finishing the bottle of the Four Roses Single Barrel. So I will have some. I'll have something new for nice. Next time. Mm-hmm. I might have to get some Jameson though, because I.
You got to go back to the picklebacks.
I already bought a batch of amazing pickles, and the juice in this would be just a shame to waste. So yeah.
Maybe it's time to try a little John Powers.
Oh right, maybe I'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get a John Powers. Let's see how that goes.
All right. A John Powers pickleback. That'll be on the agenda.
Great.
Sweet.
All right.
Well, cheers.
John, we're going to talk about employee equity today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of going to like interview you, mm-hmm. sort of. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something you and I get asked about a lot. For the number of times people ask me about it, the follow-through is very little.
Mm.
I talk about it a lot, and it rarely happens. So I think that's kind of interesting.
It's a lot of work. And I think we touched on this previously, is then there's the question of, are you really getting the bang for your buck? Is it what the employee actually wants?
Yeah. If you haven't, you should go back and listen to the incentives versus caretaking episode, because mm-hmm. I think that's sort of a lead-in.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some like new terminology, old terminology framing too that we'll get into.
True.
But maybe we should talk about first just why are people coming to us about this? What's the impetus for wanting to think about giving employees equity in your company?
I mean, I could tell you this. I see it in the small business context, like the businesses that we're always talking about. I see it in two major contexts. You know, one is you have a closely held business and somebody has been in the business for a while and they deserve to be made, quote unquote, made partner, right?
Yep.
Not necessarily a co-equal, but somebody who has sort of that, you know, level of status into the partnership, right? So that one really is kind of like a change of status for the employee from being yep. like an employee to more like a partner. The other context is more general, where you want to provide employees participation in the business. This is the incentives versus participation language. But, you know, you would say, hey, we want to old school, we want to incentivize our employees, and so we want to have an equity participation. But, you know, that one to me is about compensation, money. You know,
right.
hopefully
right.
the company has, you know, something to distribute at some point on the equity yeah. and the employee will share. So
yeah.
why did people do that in those contexts? I mean, this does kind of go back to incentives and, you know.
It makes sense. I mean, there's like the first up one, it's often actually almost like a retention mechanism in mm-hmm. some sense, because this happens in like design firms actually, and like creative agencies a lot, I think. Like that's a really good context to talk about this one, which mm-hmm. is if you have somebody that's like a creative director level or like a really key linchpin, they're either going to go start their own thing or they're not at mm-hmm. a certain point often. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't want to lose that person that's been like crucial to your company, often the conversation moves to partnership at that point.
one side it's like up or out, but the other is like the person will be out if you don't bring them up.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
I see it in the situation you just talked about. Sometimes it comes with actually delegating more managerial responsibility to that person, you know, once they become partner.
Yeah.
The other is, you know, people use this as part of a succession planning process, right? The first step of which is, you know, bring the successor in as a minority partner, right? And then ultimately when you want to retire or whatever, they buy your shares and you're out.
Which is different from, we're not going to talk about this today, I know, but okay. Different from employee ownership as succession plan.
Well,
that's, I mean, it's not different in some fashion, but I feel like that sort of owner to like cooperative employee ownership pathway is actually like a different can of worms.
It is a different can of worms because typically that involves the previous owner exiting completely from the business. And so making somebody partner, you're selling your company to them.
Tell me about this old terminology, new terminology thing.
All right. So this is what I was thinking about. You know, like in the first scenario, like I think the old terminology is the making partner.
The law firm thing.
The law firm thing. Like, you know, you have finally made it and we are permitting you to become partners with us kind of thing. Right?
Very benevolent.
Yeah. Whereas the new terminology, and this, to, you know, this is yours, large, at least for me, is, you know, sort of the redistribution of value in the company. Mm-hmm. So that's like, a new terminology.
All right.
That's a Kate terminology. A key there is, you know, it really does represent a change in status for the employee, right?
Yeah.
And then on the other one, this is the old terminology is, hey, we're going to have incentives for people, or it's going to be a participation of the employees in the, I mean, again, there, you know, the equity is used as a mechanism for having the employee share in the company profits.
Yep.
Next episode, we're going to talk about alternatives like profit sharing and bonus plans, which will be very interesting. Pros and cons.
Right. People do not need to be owners to receive profits from a company. That's Kate's headline, and we'll get back to that.
That is the right headline.
Which I think is important framing, because I have talked to folks that before they've really researched this a lot or thought much about it, it's like, well, I want my employee to get some of the profits from the business, so I'm going to make them an owner. If that's the only reason you're doing this, there might be an easier way.
There might be.
And it's not to to say that ownership, like equity, which is ownership. I mean, we're talking about ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my sort of point is profit distributions and ownership don't need to be inextricably linked in the way that we think that. Like, we can actually decouple those, and anybody generating value in the business can benefit from that value.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really talking about the ownership part and the benefits of ownership. And one of those is profits, but it doesn't need to be profits.
Well, that goes to the question of what is the employee actually getting?
What do they get?
Yeah. So they're going to get some kind of equity security in the business, right? In a corporation, that could be a stock option or a restricted stock. In an LLC, that could be however you designated a share, a unit, a percentage interest in the company. Those are all just how it's articulated in the operating agreement. I think for our discussion, let's just call it shares, because that way it could be like shares in a corporation or shares in an LLC. It's essentially just a piece of the company designated as a thing that we're going to call a share, right? Yep. But, you know, you need to have that equity security created and authorized in the company's formation documents, right? So the articles of incorporation will say there's this class of shares, there's this many of them, and it'll say this is what kind of stock it is. And in an LLC operating agreement, it'll do the same thing. When we do these, you're often amending or restating those documents in order to create the thing that you're going to give to the person. So like in the incentive or the participation context, you might create a new class of shares, like a class B share that doesn't vote, has certain economic rights. And the other thing to note on that is that, you know, when you're doing this, it's the company that's creating these securities and issuing them. You know, this isn't typically done where one of the partners will like transfer shares. That can happen under some circumstances, but typically it's not.
So tell me about like dilution, because obviously you have a pie.
You have a pie.
You have your business pie. You're slicing up that pie and you're putting some on the employees' plates. If I were an owner and I was going to give out some slices of pie, does that mean I own less? Does that mean I get less? You know, like what are the actual implications of that? You already said I don't have to give up my decision-making power if I don't want to. Like I could still keep all of that and just give a piece of the shares. Or I could say like, nope, we're going to be equal partners and blah, blah, like there's certainly that option too.
I mean, look, whatever the form, the shares that the owner owns and the shares that the employees own are going to reflect a percentage ownership in the company, right? Mm-hmm. And there always has to be 100% ownership in the, you know, 100% of the shares. I've talked to many business owners who don't really, they don't understand that. They first are like, well, I just want to set aside 10%. But you can't do that. Like you always have to have 100% of the company. Otherwise, what does that really mean? Those 10% don't have to be issued, but at any given time, you have to look at what's actually been issued, and that's 100% of the company. So the dilution thing is that you're making more pieces of the pie. And so the actual amount that's owned by the partners before issuing and granting shares to employees is still the same number. It just represents a smaller piece. That in its basic form is dilution.
If I had a pie that had 8 slices, I could make a bigger pie.
Yes.
It still has 8 slices, you know, and then
If you had 8 slices and you owned all 8, you own 100% of that pie. But now let's say you issued, you want to have 2 more slices, right? Well, you still own 8, but now you own 8 of 10.
Yeah.
So instead of owning 100%, you own 80%.
So my slices of pie just got a little smaller.
In a nutshell, that's dilution.
You know, we're talking proportions, basically, but that's not the same thing as like value over time. If you're worried about if I sold this, how much money would I get? Theoretically, ideally, you vest your employees and they're more invested or something like that. You grow the business together, it's worth more, you exit. It's not like your value whole numbers might go down. It's just that final proportion, what you might have gotten at one point is going to be, you know, you've sectioned some of it off.
The idea behind dilution is that it's a good thing.
Yep.
Your percentage of the pie might be less, but the pie itself is worth more by having these other participants in it.
That's a better way to put it, what I was trying to get at, which is like, I think the dilution, the term has all these negative connotations of like,
I own less in my company.
Yeah. But I think the trick of it is like, and this is why I think the term is misleading often, is that dilution always involves increasing the size of the pie. So it's not like the business is shrinking.
No, hopefully it's the other way around, and it's positive dilution. It's that you are growing the value of the company by the dilutive transaction, whether that's incentivizing or participating your employees. Yeah, yeah. It's the same thing is true if you actually bring in outside investment. That is a dilutive transaction. But we are talking now just about like companies that are on a positive thing and, you know, and we're looking forward that way. So we're thinking about positive dilution.
Yeah. Well, don't bring your employees into a sinking ship. How does the employee get this? Like, do you just one day wake up and you have equity? Like, how do they get the shares? How are they just, do they have to pay for them?
No, it's like the tooth fairy. It shows up under their pillow and then they all of a sudden have equity. So the equity can get in the hands of the employees either by having them purchase it or by, for lack of a better word, giving it to them, right? Granting it to them.
Yep.
I mean, you never see the purchase piece in the, in what we're calling the incentive slash participation context.
Right.
You see it sometimes in the part, in the making partner context, sometimes. Yep. And some of that is a tax question. You know, if you pay fair value for what you're getting, then, you know, that should not be a taxable transaction. Right. And presumably the company that you're receiving the shares in has some value, something more than zero.
Otherwise, you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, that would not be good. There's that reason to do it that way. There's also, you know, this, if the employee does pay something to become partner, clearly they have skin in the game. And, you know, there are ways to do that, that either it could be a cash payment, and that depends on how much, like what the number is, which goes back to like how you value the company. And sort of like a side note on that is, you know, my experience with that is, you know, in this context, the founder partners are not looking to make money for the company on this transaction.
Right.
Try to value it as low as is justifiable to the IRS. Right. And usually that means it's some kind of book value valuation. So, you know, if the number's low enough, the employee can just pay for the shares. Otherwise, the company can lend the money to them. The company could do a deal where it's offset against bonuses that they would otherwise be entitled to over the future, and they could somehow, you know, find ways to finance it for them. But under any of those circumstances, you know, it's the employee purchasing and buying into the company. In the grant, you know, participation context, that doesn't happen. So there you do end up with a tax issue.
I'm curious if you have an opinion on this. Like, do you feel like employees should put skin in the game? Or that, you know, if they've worked long and hard enough, they actually deserve the grant? Like, do you have opinions on sort of how this plays out in terms of like relationships and how people are oriented towards the business?
In the partnership, making partner context?
Yeah. Because I know people that are stalwartly, vociferously argue that employees should never be granted equity that they should pay in. You know, that there's never a circumstance where employees are like, I earned this, I deserve it, and so give it to me. Mm-hmm. And their advice is that's to be avoided at all times. And I've also heard the opposite.
Yeah. I don't think it would make sense, though, to have employees buy into an incentive compensation type plan that was an equity plan, right? That doesn't make sense. But in the other case, I actually fall into the camp of they should have some skin in the game, especially if you're using it as a succession planning, like to start some succession planning.
Why, John?
It's handcuffs. I mean, it keeps them from leaving the company, right? And yeah. I mean, if the downside is just, yeah, I can walk away, I lose my equity, or maybe I even get paid something on it. We're going to talk about that. They're less attached. Actually, you should answer this, but think about... No. Because think about the wonkiness that might get created if
Well, here's... Because I actually agree with you. I don't know if that surprises you or not, but
yeah.
I don't know if I'm willing to be like an absolutist that this always makes sense, but I do think that even long-term and dedicated employee, given a lot, I do think that the role of owner and role of employee are different things. And I do think even if, you know, we started our company together, we didn't put any money in at the beginning because we bootstrapped it. Like, there is all of that, like, sweat, sleepless nights, like, just the emotional labor investment of ownership that's wildly different than employment. Even in, like, really hardworking, I give it my all jobs. Mm-hmm. A partner that was an employee that feels they deserve it just because they've been there a long time, I think that's something to be wary about.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of the dynamic of partnership or mm-hmm. like equity and ownership. So I think there's that. And yeah, I do think that there's something of like, you don't get something for nothing. And I don't want to discount labor and employment and like all of those contributions. And I think this is why actually profit distributions are important, which mm-hmm. we'll get to next time. Mm-hmm. But I think I fall on the like, you need to pony up something.
I do too.
Yeah.
I'll say this though. There have been not infrequent occasions when I've been asked to review deals from the employee side who's mm-hmm. being offered the grant to be made partner, and there's mm-hmm. a buy-in. And the buy-in amount is so significant that the projected return on the employee's investment oh, yeah. makes no, it so not. It doesn't make sense.
No, that's yeah. not cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say, you know, like in the cooperative world, worker co-ops, there's a buy-in. Maybe you work in the company for a little bit, your dating period, and then you become a worker. You want to become a worker owner. There's always a buy-in. And the amount depends on the business model and type of business and whatever. It's not based on valuation of the business ever. It's usually a set amount, like $1,000, $10,000, right. whatever. Right. Like that thing where you're not going to get a return and you're like, the owners are trying to make money off of it. I think that's bullshit.
It is bullshit. And, you know, it sucks because, you know, I'm asking the client, like, how are you ever going to see this back? How many years are you going to have to be with this company before you even break even? And that might, you'd be way better off just continuing to collect your salary and maybe get a bonus plan of some yeah. sort.
Yeah.
So, you know, those deals blow up.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and yeah. that's the reason. Yeah. I want to say one thing about taxes before we have our guest interlude. And that's the piece of how does somebody get shares in like in the incentive context where they're being granted for no consideration. Again, you know, we're talking about a company that presumably has some value, whatever it is, at the time of the grant. And that does create a tax issue. So yep. our outside expert can speak more to this. So I will give just a nutshell with the caveat that I am not a tax expert. The high level issue there is that if you just grant the share to the employee, you are giving that employee something that has some value. And the IRS will say that employee received that value as compensation. And yep. so the result of that is that the employee will have compensation income in whatever that amount is at the time that they received the interest in the company.
Which could be quite significant, too, depending on the size of the business.
If it's a substantial business, there could be a real tax hit there, you know? Yeah. Right. So fortunately, there are ways to deal with that, especially in the corporation context. That's one of the reasons why corporations issue stock options.
Yeah.
Stock options have an exercise price that on a per share basis is tied to the valuation of the company at the time that the option right. is issued. And so the employee, when if they're able to exercise, only shares in the growth or the value of the company over that exercise price. And the IRS says, well, then they haven't gotten anything of value at the time that it was issued. And so there's no tax. That is an oversimplification, but that's basically the idea. And the same thing is true in the LLC partnership context, you know, that we issue what's called profits interests, and profits interests have a built-in threshold, which is sort of parallel to the idea of the exercise price in a stock option. And the profits interest will say that the employee only shares in the value or growth of the company over that threshold. So then again, oversimplifying,
yay.
The IRS is saying, okay, you know, because on day one, if they sold it, they wouldn't get anything. They're not, they haven't taken any value in from that issuance.
There are ways around this.
Well, they're normal. I mean, we do them all the time. Yeah. And this is what I was going to say. It's like almost always in an LLC that's taxed as a partnership, we'll do profits interest. But again, if you don't already have that built into your operating agreement, you have to create that in your agreement so you have the security that's that. and then you go ahead and do it. But that's the idea. So that's tax on issuance. Then there's right. the question of tax, like if you actually are fortunate enough to receive a distribution on
that. On the gains.
On the gains, what do you pay?
Yeah.
Is it capital gain? Is it short term? Is it long term? And that is where we need
our special guest,
our outside yes. expert to weigh in.
So we're very excited about this because we have another professional that you and I often work with. John Sullivan,
yes,
CPA, who we invited to be our special guest today to explain the things that are outside of our pay grade. I'm not going to say above because that doesn't make sense, but this comes with a content warning, which is that we have a live wire tax professional CPA going to talk about tax things. So if that's going to make you have heart palpitations, please fast forward a little bit. Don't stress yourself out.
Let's break it down very simple. Let's say you have a company that's an LLC that owns a building. And again, I'm going to say tax is very complicated, as you sure you know. I really don't want to get into things for purposes of this podcast, such as depreciation and things like that. So let's look at this where we have a profitable business, and let's say the value of that LLC, keep it very basic and say, is this $100,000 to keep it simple? And in the situation with the capital interest, if this employee or someone else is going to be buying in as a partner for maybe, let's say, 25%, that ownership interest is worth $25,000. So for us, we're just saying it's worth $100,000 because the IRS is very interested in what that's worth because ultimately, that person coming in and buying 25% really needs to put up $25,000 in that example for that interest. Now, if they don't, because a lot of people don't have $25,000 laying around, the LLC may say, we're going to let you, you know, buy into this. And if that's the case and they don't come up with that, well, a lot of times they're performing services. That's really where a lot of this comes in. You have an employee that said, hey, I have what's called sweat equity a lot of the times is the term that's used. That's I'm going to come in with this. Well, you're going to get a capital ownership interest. There's value there. So you can't just give it to them for nothing.
What happens if you do? What happens if I just say, hey, you've been such a good employee. I want you to make your partner. Here's 25% of the company.
Right. So what would happen is we would come up with that value. You're not putting up the $25,000, but we're basically going to give you this. It's worth $25,000. The IRS would say, all right, that person now, incoming partner, has received essentially $25,000 of compensation. And in that scenario where they're basically working that sweat equity, they would be taxed on the $25,000 and ordinary income tax rates. You would be paying a hefty sum in taxes for that. We'll call it, you know, free equity because nothing is really free.
So if the employee pays that $25,000, whether that's upfront through a promissory note, whatever, but they're paying the value for the 25%, is there a tax implication to them or to the company?
There would not be a tax implication if they actually came up with the value because it would only be if they were, again, getting something for nothing. So
if you buy it, it's there's no tax, but correct. If you get it essentially for services that you either provided or are going to provide, there's the tax.
That's right. In a situation where the employee is going to be providing the services, now has a taxable event and would pay tax on that $25,000, the $25,000 is basically a deduction for the company. It would have been, if you think of it this way, it's a really good way to think of it. If we valued those services at $25,000, normally, the company would be paying that person as an employee for $25,000 worth of services. The employee would take that $25,000 and then just contribute it back into the company for their 25%. That's essentially what happens. They're paying tax on that $25,000. Even if they don't receive it, they're receiving equity or they're receiving something, just not cash.
So let's assume there's not an actual buy-in. The employee's not going to pay the taxes. They don't want to do that. It doesn't make sense. Then we're in the situation of the profits interest, correct?
So now we're at option two. I like the idea of the profits interest, because what the profits interest is, there's no tax ramifications at all if it's done right. But what the profits interest really is saying at this point in time, we have a value of the company. It still could be, in my example, that $100,000. But you coming in, we're going to grant you a profits interest, meaning you're going to be receiving a percentage, whatever it may be, 25% of the profits of the business going forward from effective date onward. And now there's no tax consequence because they did not receive anything on that effective date. Now, here's the kicker, is if there is a liquidity event at some point in the future, meaning the LLC sells out, has someone, you know, takes them over and buys in, remember that profits interest partner never received that, in my old example, the $25,000 of equity. So what would happen is, in theory, this profits interest is only going to participate above and beyond what that value was as of their effective date. So, for example, if the company was worth $100,000 on day one of when the employee received their profits interests, and now, you know, a couple of years go by, and now that valuation of the company has grown, and now maybe it's worth $200,000. The profits interest partner is only participating in from the growth from that $100,000 to $200,000. So that's the key difference about the profits interest versus capital. There's no tax consequence, but everything up until that point, they are not participating in, whether it be previous profits or whether it be, you know, the liquidation of that $100,000 of capital that was initially there.
So we've kind of gotten to the point of like, all right, you're doing this, figure out the tax ramifications. You know, at that point, there's some decisions to make around governance issues, around vesting, like, and then around like what happens if the employee wants to leave.
Repurchase rights.
Is this marriage for life? What's the exit?
Yeah.
Deal.
Yes.
So I want to ask you about the like vesting and governance stuff. So I'm an employee. I just got a little 5% equity of the company I've been working with. Like, that gets me those shares. Does it get me anything else? Like, do I get to make decisions? Do I get to see the financials? Am I a real big partner, or is it like a, does that change my status?
It depends. And first of all, you may not get all of your 5%. Let's start with that. That's the vesting thing. Like, you could be granted 5%, but you essentially earn that 5% over time, or it vests over time. So that's a schedule that says, as time goes, like, you get pieces of that 5%. In tech companies, we're used to seeing a standard that's like a 4-year period. Like, so that that 5% is a lot. But let's just use it.
I'm just making up bullshit numbers.
That's a big number. That's a big number, but whatever. So,
well, you know, I'm a really good employee, John.
Okay. So you go, that's a big, all right. So you definitely, because I'm the company, I'm like, you're on a vesting schedule, right? So that's time-based vesting, and the employee has to be currently employed and continuously employed through the vesting date in order for that part of the vesting to occur. Sometimes these vesting, especially in the partner context, is not time-based, it's milestone-based.
Okay.
So there might be some very important things that you expect of this person. I had one that not that long ago where they were actually establishing a new division. So milestone number one, write the business plan. Milestone number two, you know, implement the technology. Milestone, and they had some dates associated with it. And then there were performance milestones over the ensuing couple of years, you know, that kind of thing. And so there were tranches of the shares that vested if those milestones were hit.
Big carrots.
Yes. We set them up so they were achievable, but they also met the company's goals. All right. So that's vesting. And then there's, I think you were saying, what else do I get? So this is the governance question, right?
Do I get to make boss decisions?
Well, What do you think?
Well, I think it depends. It depends. I know. Right? The answer to everything is it depends. It does. I think some of it depends on, you know, the founding owners. Like, are they wanting to share decision? Because a lot of folks do. They're like, all they've wanted their whole solo business lives is somebody to share the burden of decision making.
Yes.
Because it's tiring. You know, there's a lot of folks that I talk to that one of the reasons they want to do this is because they want to share the burden.
They do.
And you can't share the burden of ownership without actual ownership, no matter how hard you try. Mm-hmm. And I think the other end of the spectrum, which is probably more typical, actually, which is like, no, you get some minority shares of this. That's your benefit. We're still running this thing. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in the incentive context, right?
Yeah.
But in the partner context, it can go a lot of ways. Even if the founder is motivated by what you just said, which is I want somebody else to help me with the decisions, they still don't necessarily want to give up control, right? So it's one thing to vote. It's one thing to have your vote actually like mean something, right? In the other context, you're likely to see some sort of non-voting kind of class of share being issued. Yeah. I've done them a lot of different ways. It can be non-voting, or it could be non-voting for a certain amount of time. And then if you're finally there, like, you know, whatever. Or it could just be, you know, you're getting less than 50% of the company. You get to vote, but, you know, we make sure that the management structure says that it's somehow majority in your vote.
Yeah.
So long as the other partners maintain the majority, your vote is going to get overruled.
I think it's worth pointing out, though, too, that, like, when we say voting, we're talking about decisions that are few and far between and very heavy, mm-hmm. or impactful, maybe, mm-hmm. is a better word. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not necessarily talking about day-to-day workings and ins and outs of company, because those you're not probably going to lay out in your operating documents anyway.
No.
Like, this is really like, are we voting somebody off the island? Are we, you know, like, are we dissolving? Is this sale? Like, it's like the very core ownership things that have to do with the like continuance of the company or not.
Definitely. Definitely. And as a practical matter, you know, almost all the time, even if people disagree, they're eventually going to figure out how to agree. But there will be those cases where there's just an irreconcilable dispute over whatever, bringing in another partner, taking a big piece of debt, whatever it is. You could have 50-50 and it doesn't, then you have to go to court. But in this case, if you haven't given up control, then you have control. You know, there's so many different permutations on this also. Sometimes you could see the employee who receives the minority share in the company have some kind of veto rights. That's unusual. You'd see that more in an investor context, like someone puts money in and they have some protections. And then sometimes, like I did one not that long ago where there was no veto right, but basically we wrote a provision that said, like, you don't get to vote, but I will commit in this agreement not to treat you disproportionately to the way I treat myself. So if it's good for me, it's good for you.
There's all sorts of options to exercise here, but it all kind of boils down to like, what's the intent and the type of relationship you're trying to create, both between you maybe as founder and employee or employees that you're giving equity to, but also between the employees and the company. Like, what do you want their relationship to be? Is it just one of incentive and benefit? Is it one where they're actively guiding the company and have a hand in it? Like, there's all sorts of, you know, do you really want to be true partners in the like decision sense? Mm-hmm. Or you're just looking to reward people that have really contributed at a high level? Like, I think that's sort of the like probably step one is like, what are you actually trying to do here? Because all the stuff that you're talking about flows from that mission statement almost of like, what's the point of this?
Exactly. I mean, you're going to see these features in all these equity grants, but how they work depends on exactly what you're talking about, what you want to accomplish.
Which is probably people aren't as thoughtful about as they should be at the beginning. Or like, I think a lot of, well, or let me say this. At least a lot of the conversations I have about this are trying to sort out just that. of like people, you know, will come and be like, I think this is a good idea. And then we try and start to dig through like, well, what kind of relationships are you trying to create and like, you know, continue through this particular choice and mechanism? Because mm-hmm. there's lots of other ways.
For me, I do have a little bit of an old-fashioned default on this.
Okay.
I do. So like my sort of standard starting point or my standard form for dealing with this is to make it as sort of owner or founder partner favorable. So the idea would be to limit voting rights, to mm-hmm. limit inspection rights, you know, information rights, to have a vesting schedule that's on there, to have some repurchase rights, which we could talk about, that might be a little more aggressive as the starting point. Then I see, okay, what's the reaction from my client to those things, and then work back from there.
So you're almost like using that as a litmus test for like, let's start at the, you're the sun and then like see if that lines up with their values and their thinking.
Because I'm not as deep with them in the way that you are to be able to talk about that stuff necessarily in advance, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, I mean, I just did one that where, you know, I wrote a voting provision that basically gave the, and this person was bringing someone in at a significant percentage, almost like a co-founder, mm-hmm. right? Even though time-wise, that wasn't the case. And I wrote the normal sort of negating their voting rights, but having all the same economic rights. And the client was like, no, I want this person to be a partner. So that's what we did.
I like that as a sort of like, you can start to slide the dials further out, but you have to start somewhere. And if you start it sort of unified, like the owner is privileged and we're going to protect their risk and their mm-hmm. ownership investment, mm-hmm. then you can start to kind of like slide the power dials, really, of like, you know, decision-making, money,
Vesting, all of it.
Governance. Yeah, that's interesting. So, John, we have a little plan, which is there is this sort of big chunk of decision making and thought, and it's pretty technical, but I think I want to hear about it, which is about repurchase rights. What if the employee wants to leave at some point, right?
It's really important because, you know, we've gone through and said, now the employee owns and has rights in this interest in the company. The repurchase concept is, under what circumstances are they permitted to keep it? And under what circumstances are they required to forfeit it or sell it? If it's the second piece, if they have to sell it, meaning the company can repurchase it, what are the terms? Because a million different ways to do it.
So we're going to do this as an addendum because we don't want this to be like 5 hours long. And I feel like this is like the nerd extra addendum. You know what I want to end on though? Because I think we just went through this like, here's this very complicated, lots of work you need to mm-hmm. hire a lawyer thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like saying, well, there's an alternative. You could just give people profit. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's an unlike, but why would you really want to do this? This is a good idea for the right circumstances.
It is. I mean, there can be some tax advantages to doing it that way. You know, long term, if the company's successful and there's a liquidity event, that's one. But to me, the real reasons go back to what you were talking about before, which is sometimes it is what's appropriate for the circumstance. And the employee just wants or deserves to be a quote-unquote owner.
Yep. Yeah. If you're not going to turn into a worker or a co-op, which is a different thing, and you want the people that work in your business and are committed to your business to have a stake in that, to like be rewarded from it, this is what you do. Like you give them a piece of it. Yeah. And it is meaningful. And you've had situations where employees don't actually care about, like, the owners go through this whole thing, and then it turns out the employees don't really give a shit. And so that's interesting, but...
That goes in the category of reasons not to do it. Right. Is that it's complex, employees don't always understand it, and you just wasted a lot of time and money.
So maybe talk to your people first and see if this is something they actually want. There's some wisdom.
Good advice.
All right. Talk to you next time, John.
Can't wait. It's always good.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Whiskey Fridays. Whiskey Fridays is a collaboration between my friend and colleague, John Gerber, who you can find at unlawyer.com.
And my friend and colleague, Kate Tyson, who's at wanderwellconsulting.com.
If this episode resonated with you in any way, we'd love for you to share it with a friend.
And if you have any whiskey recommendations, please share those with us as well.
This week's musical guest is the one and only Dan Natz.